welcome to the Mystery Twins Detective Agency. I'm Liam S. Smith, and I do believe I have the power to solve this mystery.
Oh, that's what I was going to do. Except I was going to say, I do believe that we're going to record a great podcast today.
Aww.
That's the power of the placebo effect. If you say it, you'll manifest it.
It's true. It's the secret.
That's the secret. I'm Regan Lloyd.
And this has been the Mystery Twins Detective Agency.
How you doing, Liam?
I'm good.
Excellent. Anything notable been happening in your world?
I feel like something did, but now that we're recording, I've forgotten.
Fair enough.
Yourself?
No, nothing interesting at all.
Cool. What wonderful lives we lead.
This is the highlight of our lives, honestly.
It's true. Once, when the moon is high in the sky, we'll come together and solve a mystery.
Or not solve a mystery. We'll try and solve a mystery.
Indeed.
So, yeah, if you've never listened to the podcast before, you're welcome for that little recap of what we do.
Mm-hmm. This is a podcast where we watch mystery-centric television and try to solve the mystery before the television show tells us what it is.
And
there's
got
to be a more pithy way to put that.
There must be. We'll work on it. We'll get our elevator pitch happening.
We'll do some market research. We'll send out some survey monkeys to our listeners.
Yeah.
I'll be like, fly, my pretties, fly. And they'll fly away holding surveys.
That was a surprisingly good joke about Survey Monkey.
It's one of my top 10 Survey Monkey jokes.
You have a little folio that's just like, jokes about different types of social media and branding tools.
Your Survey Monkey, your MailChimp. Regan, before we start talking about this week's show, Houdini and Doyle episode
three. I hope we watch.
I want to ask you a question.
Oh, I was going to ask you a question, but you ask me.
Okay. What's the river deal?
Well, I'm glad you asked.
Sugar. honey. What is the river deal?
Well, Riverdale is on a little bit of a mid-season hiatus at the moment, which is great for us because it means we can actually catch up.
Yeah.
That's good.
So there's been one episode released since we last talked about it. So after this, we'll be back on schedule.
Back on track.
I just have the Riverdale Wikipedia page open here because I wanted to briefly read a recap of the last episode before we discussed it. And I've just got a note on the production here where it says, sets include Pop Tate's chocolate shop, a copy of the functioning diner used in the pilot that is so realistic that a truck driver parked his 18-wheeler believing that it was open.
Amazing. That's the sort of gritty realism we've come to know and expect from Riverdale.
It looks pretty real in the show, but honestly, I just thought it was a soundstage.
Yeah, me too. I just haven't thought about where in time is Carmen Sandiego go.
What was I listening to recently where they were doing where in San Diego is Carmen Sandiego?
It must have been
the flop house or something. Maybe once the show is finished, it'll become like Central Perk or Cheers.
That would be great. We can do a pilgrimage there.
Get up to all sorts of sexy murder.
So where we're up to in Riverdale is basically, I can't remember what happened in this episode because it was probably very dull, but it did end with the heavy implication that Jughead's dad killed Jason.
Yes, so this was episode 7, In a Lonely Place, and it was a lot of sort of low-key family drama and less mystery stuff, but I think it was good stuff.
Yeah, it was more of your teen drama than teen mystery.
Now, highlights of this episode include all the good people gathering in the woods to search for Polly, who's gone missing, and then encountering an evil hunting party led by the Blossoms, who had, like, foxhounds and all just, like, done up in their crazy Victorian hunting gear.
Yeah, like, they were dressed for a fox hunt, right?
Yeah.
It was weird.
So then they all met each other in the woods, and then, like, the good people, a.k.a. Betty and co, were like, okay, so let's get out in front of the story and do a press conference in front of the whole town where we just are like, hey, Polly's not evil, she's run away, she was carrying Jason's child, and then all of a sudden the Blossoms are like, now we're really on Polly's side.
And yet,
we love Jason, and we love Jason's unborn child.
Because at the end of the episode, Cheryl comes in and to the diner and tells Polly that she has to get out, and then Polly moves in with the Lodgers.
because Polly had been secretly living in Betty's attic, and Betty was making arrangements for her to move in with the Blossoms, who were like, we'll look after the child. But then they got the impression that once the child was born, they would do away with Holly or something worse.
Holly? Who's Holly?
I keep saying Holly. I don't know why.
It doesn't sound quite as wholesome as Polly.
No, it's not. Doesn't have quite that sort of 50s...
Pollyanna-ish quality, yeah.
Mm. It's got a bit more of a sort of a Hollywood appeal to it.
Yeah. That's for their sexy... That's probably what she's going to be called in the sex... Not sex tapes. What are those?
In Riverdale and XXX parody.
Yeah.
Is that what you were going for?
Yeah, that's what I was going for. But I forgot the word for porn and I was just like, you know, the sex video.
I'm sure.
I want to know what the pun titles for Riverdale porn are.
I mean, from what I hear, he said, distancing himself, all of those pun titles have just gone the way of the dodo. And now they're just like Pokemon and XXX parody and 30 Rock and XXX parody.
No, remember the Adventure Time one?
Vaguely.
I only remember it vaguely as well, but it had a good title.
I'll take your word for it. Meanwhile, the A-plot of the episode is the attempt at mending the relationship of Mr. Archie, Fred Andrews, and Mr. Jughead, F.P. Jones.
Who, let's not forget, is a gang leader.
Gang member, at least.
I thought he was the leader of the Southside Snakes.
It's unclear.
Oh, well, there you go. basically, the kids try and fix it. They can't because their wounds run deep.
I mean, things are in a better place than they were at the start of the episode.
But Jughead's dad is definitely abandoning him at the end of the episode.
Because we learnt that, gathering my thoughts, we learnt that Jughead's dad, F.P., Forsyth Pendleton, aka Jughead's real name in the comics, and Fred Andrews co-founded Andrews Construction. But then, according to Mr. Jughead, after he got in trouble with the law once over a minor detail, Fred bailed him out and was like, oh, by the way, that bail money was a buyout. Not nearly worth what your stock in the company is worth. Get out of here. And then he told that to Archie and Jughead while they were jamming in his garage once, after Archie and Jughead had conspired to get him another job back at the company. And so Archie was like, what the fuck, Dad? And then Dad Andrews was like, actually, I bailed him out like a heap of times and he was getting up to serious shit and stealing office supplies or construction supplies and selling them to...
I was going to say, I don't think he's like stealing staplers and selling them on the black market.
Stealing pens. He stole so many pens that the company was going into the red. So yeah, he had to let him go.
But
he's back now and he's trying to turn his life around, trying to kick the drugs and alcohol, and then Jughead gets arrested for murdering Jason.
Which he didn't do.
No. For reasons that I can't remember.
Yeah, I can't remember either.
But they were like, you're an outcast, therefore you have a motive. So as he's being arrested at school, he's like, call my dad to Betty and Archie. And so they do, but it turns out that Archie and his dad are the first ones to come to the police station, and Archie's dad provides him with an alibi by lying and saying that...
Yeah, an illegal alibi, Fred Andrews.
And saying that, like Archie, Jughead was working for him during the summer.
Which I guess is his way of, like, making amends for the FP drama in the day.
Mm. And then as they're leaving, FP shows up and is like, I'm going to go beat up the sheriff. And everyone's just like, stop, FP. Just...
Don't do that.
You're bad.
FP, more like FP. Don't. I couldn't think of anything. I thought maybe it would happen as I was talking.
More like frickin' prick. More like fuck pineapples.
No. That would be uncomfortable. Hilarious.
And then at the end of the episode, Jughead has decided to stay with the Andrewses for a while, and we see FP alone in his house, and the camera slowly pans to Jason's Letterman jacket from the car that was set fire to last episode, in his wardrobe.
What the fuck?
What? Also, was this the episode where Veronica went clubbing? Yes, it must have been.
I think it was. Yeah, that was weird. Like,
Veronica was very angry at her mum for signing away, for forging her signature on important company documents to award a construction contract to Andrew's Construction. So she was acting out, and that included doing lots of online shopping at glamazon.com, despite their financial restrictions at the moment.
Yes, this was the Glamazon.
And then, as a, what, 16-year-old?
15 or 16, yeah.
Going clubbing with Reggie, Josie, and Kevin.
It's just nice to be invited, you know.
Is that Kevin's point of view?
No, that's my point of view as Reggie.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Do you get it? Because it's also my nickname as well as a character in Riverdale.
Oh, of course, yes.
Thank you.
I get it. It took me a minute there because I was just so wrapped up in how Reggie is like, I guess he's kind of part of that clique by
He's such a periphery character.
Prior to the Lodgers arriving in town, weren't the, whatever his last name is, weren't they meant to be the most wealthy family in Riverdale?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But not nearly on that level?
No.
Can you tell I've been reading a lot of Archie comics recently?
I've been trying to explain Riverdale to people here. And because you hadn't read any Archie comics before we started watching it, had you?
No, but I had a general idea about what it was via osmosis.
Yeah. No, everyone here, I'm like, oh yeah, so it's like the Archie comics characters, but, you know, in like a fun, creepy Twin Peaks-y sort of thing. And everyone's like, I don't read comics. And I'm like, no, but you know, like Archie comics. And they're like, no. I'm like, you know, like Archie and Betty and Veronica and Jughead. And they're like, I don't read comics. I don't know what that is. Is that like an Australian thing?
So, what's a Jughead?
I don't understand how... This is what you call people who really like the Insane Clown Posse.
Oh, I enjoyed that.
Thank you.
Are they... It's funny, they had basically the exact same conversation this week or last week on Stop Podcasting Yourself about how one of them was getting their hair cut and they were like, oh, you've been watching Riverdale? And they were like, no, I don't really do comics.
I just, like...
Like it's not Iron Man.
Yeah, like, it's not, like, comics. It's like, they're just...
Stories.
But they're also just such, like, iconic characters. Like, I don't know why I know about Archie comics. I know I've read them, but I knew what they were before I started reading them.
Oh, yeah, Reggie was a big fan of the Double Digest.
Yeah, I was, yeah. So, I don't know. I also said something smelled like dead ants yesterday at work, and then everyone was just making fun of me. They're like, how many ants have you killed? Why do you know what dead ants smell like? And I was like...
Everyone knows what dead ants smell like.
No, they don't. Apparently it's just people from Western Australia.
Or maybe just not people from London.
No, because there was another Australian girl at work, and she was like, she's from Sydney, and she was like, I don't know what they smell like. So, basically, everyone was like, between that and the comics, did you, like, grow up in a weird... institution? And I was like, no, I thought these were
an institution full of ants and comic books.
Listen, doesn't sound that bad to me.
Or at least ants smell.
Listeners who are not from Western Australia, do you know what dead ants smell like? Please let us know by tweeting us at MTDAPod.
What I'm taking away from this is that everyone else has houses full of ants because they're gonna get in, and they're either gonna get in and die or get in and thrive.
Yeah. Like, anyway, just culture shock, isn't it? Anyway.
Anyway, that's the River Deal, ladies and gentlemen.
That is the River Deal. So we'll be back at ya next week, maybe?
I'm not sure when the next episode comes out.
It's on the 31st, so it'll depend when we record.
Right.
But yeah, back at ya with some more up-to-date River Deals.
Do you want to talk about episode 3 of Houdini and Doyle?
Oh, I do, because I really liked this episode.
Me too. And I really like this show.
I just spent the whole time being so upset that it was cancelled. And also, Stephen Mangan is a really good actor, and I was considering tweeting him halfway through the episode, being like, do you want to be on our podcast? Because I love you.
Yeah, I'm sure he's got nothing better to do.
No, he's definitely not filming the last season of episodes or anything. Although he was tweeting about a really ugly building in Soho, so he's probably in London.
He's also definitely not busy being the inventor of manga.
Have we seriously never made that joke before?
I don't know. Probably.
That's a good one, in that it's a bad one.
He invented... Stephen Mangan had a dream. Archie comics, but you read them from right to left.
No. You've lost it. You gotta just let sleeping jokes
people
lie.
Throw fireballs at each other.
And they have little pets that follow them around everywhere.
And also everyone's wearing a schoolgirl outfit.
Even the men.
Especially Stephen Mangan. Right now. In Soho. filming the secret revival of Houdini and Doyle.
I just... This show is so good.
This episode is about
God. Can we, like, at Netflix so that they'll
I think you should tweet at Netflix and at Stephen Mungan.
I will.
And at Adelaide Stratton, the character.
Not even the actress, just the character.
She's long dead.
The actress? What?
The character.
Oh.
It's the Victorian era.
It's a good point.
Everyone that we see in this show is dead.
Anyway, let's get some people of interest happening, seeing as we're talking about Stephen Mungan, creator of Mungan.
Yes,
anyway.
Let's.
So, playing Houdini, we have Michael Weston.
Houdini was a famous escape artist and debunker of the supernatural.
You might know him from Elementary. Have we already discussed that he was on Elementary?
No. Who was he in Elementary?
Oscar Rankin.
Interesting. I've been schooled.
Elementary schooled. Was that the joke?
Yes.
Okay. We've got as Doyle, Stephen Mungan, whose name I've pronounced differently literally every time I've said it this episode because I'm not sure how to pronounce it.
Me neither. Arthur Conan Doyle, writer of Sherlock Holmes and other stories.
He played Postman Pat in Postman Pat the movie.
Oh.
Or voiced Postman Pat.
He provided mocap for Postman Pat.
And then as light of our lives, love of our hearts, Adelaide Stratton, we have Rebecca Lydiard.
The only non-vaguely evil constable in London.
Who played Serving Ghoul in one episode of Man Seeking Woman, which the description just says, a naive romantic goes on a desperate quest for love when his longtime girlfriend dumps him. So I don't know where a serving ghoul comes into that, but I am
so intrigued.
Very intrigued. Also, another fact that I learnt while I was doing my research is that Mrs. Doyle is played by Stephen Mangan's wife.
Oh, that's nice.
It is.
Mrs. Doyle, where do I know that name from? That is the housekeeper in Father Ted.
Okay, we should not refer to her as that then.
I think we should only refer to her as
that.
Well,
that's also a good point, yes.
I googled serving ghoul and did not turn up anything of note.
Ridiculous. What's the point of being in a TV show if you can't even get a Goog hit?
Yeah. Sort out your search engine optimization, Adelaide, if that is your real name.
Which it is not, although historically, if Psych has taught us anything, it could be.
What did Psych teach us about that?
Was it Psych where, like, all of the minor characters just had the same name as the actors that they portrayed?
Maybe.
Were portrayed by.
I can't remember.
I think it might have been that episode where we were also dying of heatstroke.
I mean, that's the only episode we've watched. Listen, I make a good point.
Yeah! Maybe it wasn't that then. What was the show where...
There was something. I do remember that.
Yeah, part. It was the show with the horse. The horse float. The dog. The missing dog.
Bojack
murder.
Horseman.
Monk!
What is this?
It was Monk.
A crossover episode?
It was Monk.
Okay. There was a missing horse in Monk?
No, I think there was a dog, but we thought it was a horse for some reason, or vice versa.
I don't think there were any dogs in the Monk episodes we watched.
They built the off-ramp.
Oh, that dog, right.
That
yes.
dog. Yeah, the dog that we never saw, but we heard about.
Yeah, nothing really came of that dog.
Did they see that? I
Oh, yeah, they saw the dog in, like, the Petco supermarket car park or whatever. And I was like, okay, I guess we've paid off the dog. Congratulations, everyone. Emmys for everyone.
Yeah. So, we've spent a lot of time talking about not Houdini and Doyle.
Yeah. Do we have any sessional cast members in this week's?
Oh, I didn't even fucking think, but we do. I was just like, man, Persons of Interest is a lot easier than I remember. Okay, so the guy who played what I would say is the main what did you call him?
Suspect?
Sessional cast member?
Yes, okay.
The main episode only person is like third from the bottom of the IMDb credits for this episode.
Huh. I mean, IMDb isn't really an official thing.
No.
And I assume that's the person who plays Elias Downey, Faith Healer.
It is indeed. Nathan Stewart Jarrett, who is in Oh, he was Curtis in Misfits.
Ah, cool.
Did you watch Misfits?
Not really.
It's good.
I've seen a couple of episodes here and there.
No, you should get on it. It's good. And I'm playing... Is that... Should we do any other one? I feel like everyone else in the episode was on equal footing, so I'm either going to do just him or I'm going to do like 12 more people.
I feel like it's also worth doing his sister and also Mrs. Doyle.
Well, I already talked about Mrs. Doyle.
Yeah, but we don't know who played her.
So, Faith Healer's sister is played by Anuka Okuma. I have probably pronounced that wrong.
Apologies.
So, she was in two episodes of How to Get Away with Murder, but I don't know who she played. Oh, I mean, I can read the name. The name was Nia Leahy. Oh, is she Nate's wife? Interesting.
Did she get away with murder?
I think she is dead.
Oh.
In the show.
Rest in peace.
I think she's only in... Oh, but you know what? She played Android 18 in Dragon Ball Z TV series.
Oh my god. Shit. Yeah. I'm into that.
Yeah.
Also, it's Dragon Ball Z. Like, I know we say Z, but it's Dragon Ball Z.
Is it though?
Yeah. It's definitely Z.
And? That's what you missed on Houdini and Doyle.
Mrs. Doyle.
Mrs. Doyle, sorry. Tui Doyle. That's a weird name. It's played by Louise Delamere.
You may have also seen her in Banjo-Tooie.
What's that?
It's a video game. Nerds are loving this, don't worry.
That's the one where you pick up the puzzle pieces.
It sure is.
Yes.
You play a bear and a bird and you have a great time.
I have a puzzle piece necklace, which everyone always thinks is a Banjo-Kazooie thing.
Sweet.
It's not.
Could be.
Could be, you're right. She has been in the TV show Casualty as four different extras over 4 years.
I wonder if they were all casualties.
Nope, 14 years.
Whew.
She was Lisa Mitchell in 1999. No one had a dollar for her.
Wait, what?
What? Is Lisa Mitchell the name of the person who sang Coin Laundry?
I don't know. Could it be Joni Mitchell?
No.
Okay.
Monica Jones in 2004, Beth Geddes in 2010, and Joe Weatherall in 2013.
Great. That's our persons of interest.
That's my favourite thing.
Almost half an hour.
But, like, that's my... I love... It's not even a recurring character that pops up once every 4 years. It's just like, no one's watching for
it's
more
like
than
Casualty,
4 years at a time.
Casualty and The Bill are like the two shows that you'll see that on.
Yeah.
Particularly with English shows.
Well, yes.
So do you want to talk about this episode?
I do. You've asked me a number of times and I said yes every time and then you've made
you
me talk about something
changing
else.
Changing the subject.
Because you made me do Persons of Interest.
Yep, I forced that upon you.
You know I cannot be trusted to stay on topic and do anything responsible.
So previously, Houdini and Doyle have debunked the topics of ghosts and reincarnation, and today, God's on the chopping block. They've really sort of upped their targets.
They have. So, well, I don't know if it's God so much as faith healers, to be fair. Because you can't.
Houdini does go on a fair amount of like belligerent atheist rants.
Yeah, but that's his whole character shtick.
True.
So yeah, I feel like they can't go right for God's jugular. They need to get him in the left knee of faith healers.
The source of his power.
You know. So yeah, we open on a faith healer. No, we don't. We open on a weird flashback.
Do we?
Or we open on a faith healer and then we go to a weird flashback.
Yeah, I don't recall opening on a weird flashback.
It's when Doyle is packing
up his wife's
clothes.
No, yes, I believe we open on a faith healer and then we go to a weird flashback.
Okay, well, I will not continue to talk about it.
Okay, it's in a tent, it's in a field. There's a faith healer.
It's the Great British Bake Off!
Yay! Yeah, how come there hasn't been a show that's done a British Bake Off murder?
Oh my god.
It's so simple. You just poison one of the cakes. Or do you?
But, yeah, because how are you going to poison someone else's cake?
That's the tricky part.
And like, were you trying to kill Mary Berry or were you trying to kill the contestant?
And with all those...
tasting their own batter.
And with all those cameras around? How devilish.
Yeah, I'm interested in this.
Yeah, this is something. We should take this to the Beeb.
Yeah, we should, yeah. This can be like the revenge.
Patent pending.
For Bake Off getting stolen from the Beeb. We can produce the Great British Murder.
That's what it's called. The
Beeb. Yep. I'll think of a catchier title. Yeah.
So we're in a tent in a field. I feel like it's worth pointing out that the Faith Healer and the Sister are the only black people in the show, and also possibly in the show so far, not just this episode, because this being Victorian England and stereotypical perceptions of Victorian England, it's very white.
Yeah.
And I think also faith healing as a sort of medium has sort of strong connotations with like the soul movement, which has sort of black roots, I think. And that's worth mentioning, right?
I agree. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was just like, I've honestly got no idea about the background of faith healing.
I mean, I'm just going
faith
off
healing was not one of the
of
persons of interest that I looked up.
I'm just going off perceptions of it I've seen in popular culture, at least.
Faith healing has been seen in TV shows such as Houdini and Doyle.
That's a good actor name.
I know. That'd be a good drag name as well.
True.
You can do that once you've done your Cheers boylesque routine and you move into drag. That's your
my trajectory. Drag name.
Yeah.
So we're in this tent. Elias Downey, the faith healer, is faith healing some people. And this white guy with this amazing moustache keeps scoffing.
Amazing moustache.
It wasn't quite on the level of the guy of little Timmy's dad last week, whatever his name was.
Oh, I was going to say it was not quite on the level of like, oh, does Hipster Cop have a moustache?
I can't remember. I just look at his high top fade whenever he's on.
Yeah, I'm distracted by his hair, but I was sure he had a moustache, but maybe I made that up. Yeah, no, Little Timmy's dad last week did have the most beautiful handlebar moustache.
Yeah, literal handlebars.
You could have ridden that man all the way to town.
Stuck a feather in your cap and call it macaroni.
Yeah. What is happening? Anyway.
Yeah, this guy keeps scoffing and then eventually he's like, oh, that's rubbish. And Elias Downey is like, you shouldn't speak out against God or God will punish you. And that guy's like, whatever, Reddit. And then he keeps faith healing and then this guy starts coughing and he keeps coughing and he falls to the floor convulsing and he spits out blood and then he's dead. Do we go to our weird flashback then or straight to the police station?
I think we go to the weird flashback.
Yeah, it must be to the weird flashback. It's the past and Arthur Conan Doyle is macking on his wife.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, because it goes from the death in the tent to the opening credit.
Yes, that's right.
And then, yeah, and then it opens on Arthur Conan Doyle not wanting to go to a dinner. And I was like, well, who's this lady that he's with? Has he taken up with another woman? But no, we're in the past. It's his wife.
He's like, maybe if basically, I seduce you, I won't have to indulge Aunt Mildred for the evening.
That sounds like he's got to bang one of them and he's trying to make it be his wife.
I mean,
he just doesn't want to go to a dinner.
Yeah.
So she just like makes out with him a bit. And then he's like, well, that'll get you through dinner.
And then we cut to the present, and he's alone. Well, not the present, the Victorian era, 1800s. If it was the present, he would be alone and dead.
Why are you so obsessed with everyone in this show being dead?
It's just the facts.
Well,
it's pure science. Houdini would be proud of me.
You can talk about the present in terms of the show without being like, just want to remind everyone that everyone that was in the Victorian era is definitely dead. Like, it sounds like you're trying to hide something.
Okay, we cut to the present.
I'm a vampire and I don't want anyone to know, so I'm just going to keep talking about how people my age would definitely be dead. Just throw you all off the scent.
Arthur Conan Doyle got into a fight with Aku, Master of All Evil, and was thrown into the future. Now he seeks a way to return back to the Victorian era and undo the future that is Aku.
What are you referencing?
Samurai Jack.
What's that?
It's a cartoon.
Huh.
It's got a revival recently. Right. It's by some animation director of some renown. Cool. We cut to the police station. There's a headline like, God strike. Oh, local man
no,
struck
we
down
did a,
by God.
Also, important. Important in this.
Important in this.
Is that the reason he's been reminiscing about burning down with his wife is because he's packing up all of her dresses because he's just convinced that she's going to die, which obviously because the episode opened with a faith healer means that she'll be fine.
Will she though?
Let's not talk about it. Or should we just go through that whole subplot
no,
now?
No, I think we need to do that as it comes because it's very important to the actual plot of the investigation.
Also, sorry, I just got a message from Leah Rock.
Official listener, Leah.
Official listener, Leah, saying, I think Mrs. Gunderson killed Jason.
Yeah, I think she's on point there.
Honestly, I had not considered it.
I also think that maybe someone killed Jason, mistaking him for Archie.
That was also what she said to me when I was like, whoa, are they saying Jughead's dad killed Jason? And she was like, if he did, I reckon he mistook him for Archie.
Because there have been so many just references to how much they look alike in the show.
That's true.
And let's be honest, they don't really.
Interesting to see how this plays out. They really don't. They're just both redheads.
Mm-hmm. Anyway. We cut to police station. Newspaper headline. Local man struck down by God.
I mean, I guess.
The evil police chief, who's not evil, he's just kind of sleazy, and with his sleazy mutton chops, is like, no autopsy. This is clearly just natural causes. If you think that if you want an autopsy, find me a reason that this was not just natural causes. And then he throws them all out of his office, and as soon as he does, Houdini, Doyle, and Stratton are like, so he told us
he
to investigate,
he definitely
right?
just told us to investigate that. I was expecting some resistance from Stratton, but she seems really on board with their hijinks now, so she's just like, yup, let's go.
Oh, and there was a good bit in that office scene in which, let's see, what happened? Referring to my notes.
Oh, you made notes? Oh, that's why this episode's going off the rails. Yeah.
Well, also, their notes in my mystery envelope book on the blank sides of the page.
Okay.
So they're less coherent than my usual notes. I see. Doyle made some claim about believing in the supernatural, and then Houdini grabs the chief constable's handkerchief, flourishes his arm, and it explodes in flame. And the guy is like, that was a gift from my late wife. And then he sleight of hand reveals it, and that was a good moment, I thought, because he just didn't say anything to prove his point.
I don't think he even says late wife. I think he just says wife.
Oh, whatever.
Like, just so there's even less sentimental value.
But the point being, Houdini is just like, look, sleight of hand. And he just has the materials to do a fire trick on him.
Yeah, that was my favourite bit. Mm. That, like, of course you just walk around carrying that with you.
That's very Barney Stinson.
It is.
Also, while we're just briefly discussing taking this weird diversion.
I mean, we were just talking about the show, but all right.
While I'm going to steer us down a weird diversion, we forgot to address last week.
Yes, we did, yes!
On Houdini and Stratton's dinner date, Stratton was drinking a nice pint of beer, and Houdini just had this huge glass of milk.
And then this whole episode, there's him and Doyle are sort of making jabs at each other about how, like, Stratton didn't want to go on another date with him. And he's like, I don't know, I was perfectly charming. Maybe she's into women.
Mm, yeah, that was annoying.
And I'm like, maybe she just doesn't like people who drink pints of milk on a date, you weirdo.
Maybe the reason he gets so sick this episode is because he drank a pint of milk that wasn't fresh from the cow in an era with improper refrigeration technology.
Yeah, I wouldn't drink milk from a bar. It's probably mixed with vodka and curdled.
Ooh.
No, don't do it.
I can put those
make
curds
yourself a
in
white Russian
poutine.
If you really want some. Shut up.
We've reached that point.
That was a silly joke.
At time of recording, 40 minutes in, and we've discussed the first couple scenes of this episode.
Oh, God. Okay.
Let's really speed things along.
All right.
They go to the faith healers. Doyle is like, I believe in faith healing. This is all pretty reasonable. Stratton says, that woman there with crutches has lived on my block for the past 100 years, and if she was a fake, she'd be really dedicated.
And she's dead now.
Yeah. And then we later see in the scene that she gets faith healed.
But what's that? Houdini's been, like, slagging off faith healing for the whole scene. Yeah.
So he comes in.
And then he just falls to the floor vomiting.
Well, what happens is he comes in and Elias Downey's manservant, Joseph, meets him and is like, Mr. Houdini, you should be careful. People who slag off Mr. Downey have bad things happen to them because of God here.
Yep.
And then, yeah, he starts throwing up and vomiting and convulsing, but he's not dying. He's just having a bad time.
Yeah, and continues to have a bad time for the rest of the episode.
But we did skip over a scene which is not essential, but just provides some important context because before they went to the Faith Healing Tent, they went to the victim's funeral, and Houdini went on this big rant about how God doesn't exist and is terrible, and how he says to Downey, like, what are you going to do? Have God strike me down like you did whatever that guy... The victim is such a non-entity in this episode, I don't even know his name.
Mr. Gaines.
Okay, I feel like in episodes of shows like Castle...
Mr. Batch. Mr. Batch. Mr. Gaines is a different person. Okay. His name's Frederick Batch.
I feel like this victim was... Even though this victim was alive in this episode, he was more of a non-entity to the actual investigation than the victims in shows like Castle, where the person is already dead by the time the show starts.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because all of the investigation was just so tangential to the victim's existence beyond the autopsy that we'll get to later.
Yeah. So Houdini's rant in the church.
Yeah, and that's how people know that he is opposed to faith healing, which is significant.
But also, I thought his rant was just to let Doyle and Stratton go and do a little investigation on the body.
I guess so.
I thought it was a distraction rant.
Maybe so, yeah. Because they did investigate the body and determined that he had a tan line, an interesting rash, possibly dengue fever.
Yes, because he had been travelling for work.
Yes. Oh, and the reason he and his wife were going to the faith healer is because they'd been having trouble conceiving.
And his wife thought it was a good idea.
Yes, and he was, judging by his outburst, much less enthused.
Yeah.
So that happens, then they go to the tent, then Houdini has his sickness, and that's a recurring thing throughout the episode. Shall we just go through the Houdini sickness subplot now?
Yes.
Okay, Houdini... First he vomits in the faith healing tent, then later his back starts hurting when they're digging up a corpse and he has huge boils on his back. And then later he tries to do his matinee show where he does the same escaping a underwater case while straitjacketed that he did in the first episode, but it's going on too long and they have to pull the curtain back up and he's having a seizure, so they smash it with an axe and he's not fine, but he survives.
And then there's a fucked up dream sequence.
Yeah, he has this... fucking weird dream where, like, he sits up in his bed and he starts digging at a boil on his arm, like, right down into the flesh of his wrist. And then he wakes up and his mum is giving him chicken soup.
Which I assume was not a hallucination.
No. Well, he later credits that for his fever breaking.
That's true.
I like Houdini's relationship with his mum.
Yeah, it, like, humanizes him a little bit.
Yeah, because he's such an arsehole to everyone else.
Yeah. So that was sweet.
So throughout all of our discussions of the rest of the scenes in this episode, just assume that Houdini is in varying states of being pale and or shaky and or boily.
Should we just conclude it now? Why he's pale and shaky and boily?
Why is he pale and shaky and boily?
Well, I thought it was because none of his broken bones had ever reset.
Oh, I thought that was just... something that Doyle observed on his x-rays.
Okay.
Because, he has to, contort himself in weird ways to do his tricks all the time.
Yeah.
And he says he doesn't have time for...
Can't do a show and a cast.
That's what he says, yeah. Could be the reason, I guess, or could just be coincidence.
Yeah. I just thought that was... Why would you bring it up otherwise?
Banter. Historical fact, maybe?
Maybe. Because isn't that how he died?
No, he died because, if you may recall from our Teeves case file... He got punched in the stomach because he let people punch him in the stomach where he would tense his muscles in a particular way and weather the blow. But this person did it to him when he was unawares, and also he maybe had appendicitis or a kidney problem.
Okay. Yeah, anyway. So that's a subplot.
Yeah.
But basically it's positioned throughout the episode to be like, but... maybe you'll die as well because you said you didn't believe in faith healing and all these other people who said that are now dead.
Yes, so obviously the person in the cold open died, and also at previous faith healing shows around the country, people who have expressed their disbelief have later been electrocuted, caught fire, and been trampled by horses. But there is no evidence of any wrongdoing in these cases.
No, it's all just coincidence.
But so says Houdini, do you believe that... absence of evidence is evidence of absence of evidence?
What?
You know what I mean.
I don't know if I... Oh, wait. So, do you believe that the fact that there's no evidence
Or just because you haven't found any evidence.
There is none to be found. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Got it. On it. Yes. Love it.
So, long story short, Adelaide Stratton is like, let's dig up the body. I know a secret person in the coroner's office, spoilers, it's Doyle, who will perform an autopsy and not tell the chief constable that we're messing around with the body that he specifically didn't want autopsied. So they dig it up at night. Then Arthur Conan Doyle performs an autopsy because, I didn't realise this till I Wikipedia during the episode, he was a physician.
Yeah, I thought that. And then I was like, am I just thinking of John Watson?
I guess that must have been influential at least.
Yeah.
Certainly would have at least provided a good grounding for the medical information that Watson provides in the Holmes books.
Yeah, exactly.
So he is performing...
He's worried about a ghost.
What?
Because it looks like the guy's mouth is about to open.
Oh, yes.
But then it does, and a bug crawls out. Ooh.
Like, yeah, I guess so. He performs the first incision into the man's chest cavity, and evil poisonous gas pours out in a really sort of graphically enhanced way.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
And he passes out. We need to backtrack a bit again, sorry.
Nah.
Because that's the turning point from... Doyle being like, God struck this man down because God exists too. This man was murdered by humans.
We should probably also talk about before that, he's gotten the faith healer to go and faith heal his wife.
That's precisely what I was going to backtrack to.
Oh, well, fine.
Because Doyle, being an ardent believer in everything supernatural in this show, was like, hey, you're a great faith healer. My wife is non-responsive because of tuberculosis. Come and heal her, please. This man does. Elias Downey comes and tries to do his god magic on Tui, and nothing happens. And then he says to Doyle something like, how can you expect...
You gotta have faith. I gotta have faith.
Yeah, he does that.
You gotta have faith. Yeah, he sings All of Faith by George Michael. Yeah.
Then
she opens her eyes first... that is a tune.
Yep. Doyle sits down and does a prayer by the bedside. He accuses God of not liking that he killed Sherlock Holmes. And then says he probably prefers Dickens.
Yeah.
And then he I actually really enjoyed this scene. He gives a very... I like the acting in this show a lot. And I think that Stephen Mungan really sold this scene where he's giving this heartfelt prayer about how much he needs his wife and misses her and would love God to bring her back. And... even though he has departed from the church, it's not because of God, it's because of those assholes in the Vatican. It's a really good mix of just, like, glib remarks and also really sincere prayer.
Yeah, I thought this was, very well acted, and I was not expecting... Not I wasn't expecting good acting, but I was not expecting such a, like...
Emotional resonance.
Yeah.
He concludes his prayer.
Not what I expect from my mystery shows.
And Tui's eyes slowly flutter open. And she acknowledges his presence and they talk.
I spent so long trying to figure out if this was a hallucination or not.
I thought there must have been some sort of trick until they had a conversation. I thought maybe that there could have been a ventriloquism subplot or something if she were just going to call his name as he was leaving, which is what happened first.
That would have been the worst idea.
Yes. Cancelled that show, thank you.
I was just about to say exactly the same thing. We've been podcasting too long with all the same jokes.
We got a sort of, not groupthink, that's the bad thing. What's the improv thing called? It doesn't matter.
Yes, and?
We'd be really good at playing Zip Zap Zop with each other.
Yes. I fucking hate that game.
They have a really sweet conversation where sweet in the terms of banter, where he's like, she's like, you need a haircut. And then he's like, you're the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. And she's like, oh, then you need a haircut and spectacles.
Oh, they do have the sweetest banter.
Because she's very concerned that having been in a coma for 6 months, she's not at looking her finest.
Which is a fair concern, I think.
Perhaps not the highest priority at the moment, but, you know, I won't criticise anyone who's just woken up for a coma for having irrational concerns.
No. Also, like, come on, Victoria in England, that was your whole job, was to be pretty for your husband.
Yeah, we just did a whole episode on that.
Yeah, exactly.
So yes, that happens. Then he does the autopsy and then they come and find him passed out in the autopsy room and he's like, no, it wasn't God, it was murder because cyanide gas escaped from his chest, but it wasn't enough to kill me because I'm Arthur Conan Doyle.
Pretty much. Like, that's basically, yeah, the cyanide killed him, but it won't kill me.
Well, I mean, it was inside him is what they were getting at.
Yeah, he didn't. It wasn't concentrated enough. They did have a scientific reason, but I just really liked. I liked it.
So actually, Doyle's in a really interesting place this episode because A, he believes that this man legitimately faith healed his wife, despite Houdini's criticisms that his wife had a experimental tuberculosis treatment recently that may have done the job. But he also believes that this man was murdered, as he was.
Yeah, so interesting dilemma to put yourself in.
So after having been a bit of a wet blanket up until this point, Doyle, it's when they do the fusion dance. That's a Dragon Ball Z thing. Doyle and Stratton go and visit the widow.
Yes. Sorry, I thought you were talking about Tui, and I was like, what? But no, the actual widow from the episode, yes.
They take a nice detour to her flat in Red Herring Central.
They do.
Yes. Stratton's suspicious because she isn't distraught enough to be a widow like her mum was when her dad died.
I don't know if I buy that, and I don't know if Stratton was married.
Stratton's mum.
No, I know that's what she said.
Wait, what? Oh, you think that after her secret husband died?
Yeah.
Ooh.
That's what I think is maybe a plot. What are your thoughts?
Plausible. Circling back a bit just for a sec.
Puppies!
Ooh.
Yes,
okay.
Sorry.
No.
Yes, sorry.
If you have to attend to puppies, that's fine.
They'll be here all day.
Okay. Circling back a bit to Arthur and Tui, I just want to ask you a quick question.
All right.
Will they?
Well, I mean, one can assume they already have twice.
Hey, there are plenty of orphans in Victorian England.
That was a good point.
Back in Red Herring Central.
Sorry, yes.
Doyle excuses himself and goes and checks all of the victim's bar cabinet, I guess, for all the contents of the various tumblers and decanters in that for cyanide. He doesn't find any. But he finds a notepad and he does one of my favourite investigating tricks.
What I've learnt from these shows is that there's no point ever letting someone who's investigating you for murder go into your medicine cabinet.
Or use your bathroom.
Oh, yeah, that's what I meant, yeah.
Yes, because they will always check your medicine cabinet or your liquor.
Yeah, exactly.
But while...
No one ever needs to pee. They always need a Snope for evidence.
Yeah.
Snope? That's... the website that
they always need a Snope for evidence.
They always need to go on Snopes.com and see if there's evidence for or against your murder.
Yeah. Snopes.com/areyouamurderer. Doyle does one of my favourite investigating tricks, which is the old grab a notepad and a pencil and just rub all the graphite against it and see if you have any word imprints that you can make out.
I thought it was going to be like, he does one of my favourite tricks. Grab a notebook and a pencil and actually write down all the clues that you've seen. mind map.
You know what? A nice vision board.
So, he makes out the word apple and he's like, oh, she made her in cyanide.
But nope, because Adelaide takes a look at it later and it's like, nope, that's apple fritters.
Then there's like a whole bit about how he doesn't like apple fritters. He likes the...
I thought this was a secret double cross red herring and it was actually going to be involved in the murder.
Oh.
But I was wrong.
I kind of thought that as well.
It seemed too red herringy to bring it up and then immediately dismiss it, but I was wrong. It was just red herringy enough.
Exactly.
Where are we in the episode?
They find some hair somewhere and that's how they figure out who the murderer is.
Yes. Are we right to the murderer confrontation now?
I'm pretty sure. I can't remember anything else that happened.
Oh, they go to a restaurant where Mr. Downey is having a meal and Houdini is like, hey, you're a faith healer. You're pretty cool, huh? Drink this cyanide for me.
And he does. And then Doyle's like, I know that wasn't cyanide because you didn't flinch when he grabbed it and drank it, and you're a charlatan, but you're not a murderer.
Yeah. I liked that moment, actually. That was a cool scene.
That was a cool scene.
Yeah.
Great job, writers. I'm sorry that your show got cancelled.
Yes, so then after that, they receive reports. Well, they figure out that, you know, cyanide has to be involved, where they're going to get cyanide. Maybe a pharmacist. Adelaide Stratton pulls records of all recent pharmacists and their cyanide stuff. Turns out there was one that was broken into recently, and cyanide had been stolen, but also, what was it called? Goi powder, I think? G-O-I?
Which was for psoriasis treatment.
Oh no, Goss, I think that's an S. I can't read my notes.
Well, that's your fault. I can't help you.
Some sort of powder that was a treatment for psoriasis. And Doyle is like, I know who the murderer is.
So,
Stratton doesn't do much in this episode.
They'd also found some black hair.
Yes.
And they were like, oh, well, the guy's wife was blonde, so that rules that out.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to the Faith Hill and confront the murderer.
Yeah.
They go there. I guess it's after a show because they're all in the tent.
And who should they accuse of murder but the Faith Healer's sister?
Who he first faith healed when he was a child and she had pneumonia.
And that's how he became a Faith Healer.
Yeah.
But she always wears a big shawl, which Houdini suspects is covering her psoriasis, which she can't have on show because then her brother will try to heal it and be able to have actual visual evidence that he can't heal her psoriasis, and then everything will be thrown into disarray.
Because he never healed, like, missing arms or things like that, always sort of internal things. Although I'd say that lady never being able to walk was fairly visual.
Yeah.
But I guess that's one of those, even though they didn't explicitly address it in this episode, like in the previous ones, one of those things where it's like, but can neuroscience explain why that woman could walk now?
Yeah. Plus, they had so much other stuff going on. It was a very B-plot heavy episode.
Yes. Speaking of which, the B-plot with Doyle and his wife, they had set a dinner date for the next night in the ward.
Oh, don't! This is breaking my heart.
In which Doyle revealed to her that he had lost faith that she would come back recently and gotten rid of the dress that she wanted to wear on their special date.
Yeah, but it's okay because he's going to bring her a dinner and she'll be able to stay in her hospital gown and they'll have a nice time.
Vera is going to make it, not like the time that he tried to cook for the children and set the house on fire, so the children
the
told
kitchen.
Her in their scene together this episode.
Yeah, but then at the end of the episode he goes to...
Oh, hang on, no. Okay. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's end on that.
Okay. Let's end on a bummer.
Yeah. So, yeah, she has psoriasis. The sister has psoriasis. And it turns out that her brother, Elias Downey, sincerely believed he was a faith healer. Because the reason that she killed these people who questioned him is because he needed his purity of belief to effectively make a difference in these people's lives through, as Houdini described to us earlier in the episode, the placebo effect.
Yeah.
Which he described as something that they've recently named, but has always existed.
Yes, which I thought was interesting. But who should stagger into the Faith Healers during this exchange? But sick Houdini.
He's on his last legs. He needs a cane to hold himself up. He's pale as a ghost. And he's like, stop. Because it turns out that Elias... I was very suspicious of this Joseph character in this episode, who was just a man who hung around in the faith healing tents and threatened Houdini at one point. And it turns out the reason he exists is because in this scene, Elias steals his gun and pulls it on his sister and is like, I could shoot you, and because I'm a faith healer, I could heal you afterwards. And she's like, no, don't test it that way, I'll die.
Yeah, so that was a great use of B characters there, guys.
Hmm. So Houdini staggers in and is like, no, don't do that because she's a murderer and you're not a faith healer. The end.
Oh, hang on. I have to let Houdini out. He's all sad.
You have to let who out?
All right, sorry, yes.
You know you said I have to let Houdini out, right?
That's the name of the dog.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's serendipity.
That had not occurred to me. Sorry.
When fate has a sense of humour. Can you convince your friend to get another dog called Doyle?
Maybe.
To it.
I will.
Stay tuned, listener.
Yeah. Sorry, what were we talking? We were talking about
Houdini resolved a gun pulling situation by being really sick.
Yeah, pretty much. But then they make fun of him at the end of the episode because he must have been going there to be faith healed.
Yeah, but he's like, no, I just forgot my cufflink last time we were there. That's all it is. Yeah, yeah. I thought it was a fairly interesting angle that Downey sincerely believed that he had god powers.
Yeah,
because it would have been a much more obvious angle to make him just the charlatan.
Yeah, but the fact that he was like, but I was. This is I'm doing good.
I was helping people.
Yeah, it was an interesting angle. You are super correct.
And then we come to the denouement of the episode. No cheerful dinner date with Adelaide Stratton this time. Mr. Doyle has a date. He's rocking up to the hospital that his wife is in with a nice roast, and he overhears the doctors talking about quick do her blood work again. Do some chest compressions or some bullshit. And he comes to the office, the room to find that his wife has slipped back into unconsciousness.
So that's a massive bummer, which we all knew was coming, but it did not make it any easier to deal with.
That was very sincerely sad, I thought.
It was cruel of them to do that to us. I just want everyone to be happy.
Mm-hmm. And he goes home and... Unlike at the start of the episode where his daughter told him to hang on to his wife's dresses, this time she helped him pack them away.
I thought she was putting them back in the cupboard.
Oh, maybe.
Or was she getting stuff out of the cupboard to put into the box?
I may have misinterpreted that.
No, I'm sure she's
that.
Putting all her clothes... Yeah, I thought she... Because he starts... he's crying.
Yes.
And she sees... And she goes and, like, starts putting all the dresses back, which I thought was like, it's okay, she'll get better again.
Okay, that is much more optimistic than how I read it.
It is, but, I mean, we've got two conflicting views, so who fucking knows?
So, listener, write in. Help us solve this mystery.
Stephen Mangan, when you're on the podcast next week, please tell us. I'm using the secret, guys. Yeah. That's not a thing that's actually happening. Unless it is, because I'm using the secret.
And that's the end of our episode of Houdini and Doyle.
Do you want to give me your mystery envelope?
I certainly do. Here. Ka-chunk, ka-chunk. That's the sound of me unsealing my envelope, which had been sealed for authenticity.
Yeah, ka-chunk, ka-chunk is definitely the sound that they make.
Yep, I got to type in the combo. I got to turn the keys at the same time as someone else.
Have a retinal scan.
3328, just post when... Houdini was like, hey, drink this cyanide. I guessed that his wife poisoned him with cyanide in the apple fritters.
Oy.
And that she had... Because we knew she went to see Downey the night in his hotel room the night before the faith healing and murder. I assumed it with some incentive from Downey, or more likely his man Joseph, who had to exist for some reason.
That's a good point.
Hmm. But no, I was wrong. It was the sister.
I thought it was the wife, but she had bleached her hair after breaking into the thingy.
That's a very elaborate plot. Oh no, I left one of my hairs behind at the crime scene. Better change my
hair. Listen, I was more concerned with the devastating Doyle family plotline.
It was very distracting. And also the devastating Houdini is having a bad time.
Houdini
plotline.
On the verge of death plotline. Well, this has run long, so I'm going to save our mystery of the week for next week. But before that, we've got to know.
Will
is
they?
Is this a hot case?
So, is this a show we want to continue with, or is it a cold case?
I want to keep going.
Me too. Reggie, I really like this show.
Me too. All right, we did it.
We sure did.
We made a decision.
We have up to two more episodes in our allotment of Houdini and Doyle.
Oh, does the Teeves case file not count?
It certainly doesn't.
Oh.
And I guess we'll see you next time for another tale of mystery and magic in Houdini and Doyle, episode 4, Wingardium Levi Murder.
That's not what it's called.
No, that's terrible.
And also, you should at Stephen Mangan so he'll come on the podcast.
No, you should. You have the podcast account.
I know, but what if all of our 6 followers do it as well?
Yeah, all of the junior detectives out there should start campaigning.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. The U was a general U, not a U, Liam S. Smith.
Yeah, I thought you meant me, Liam S. Smith, and not the royal U.
No, I meant the royal you. At the Queen, please, at Stephen Mangan.
Yes, that would really help us out, Your Majesty. We know you listen.
Thank you, Mom. Or Adelaide Stratton. Listen, I'm not fussed.
True.
I really enjoyed the acting on this episode, and I want to congratulate everyone on what they did.
If Stephen Mangan comes on, we can watch the other Dirk Gently.
Yes, perfect. Cool. Well, we did it, team. If you would like to at us, you can do so at MTDAPod on Twitter. Yeah.
At us and tell us Stephen Mangan should come on your show.
And you can email us at mtdapod@gmail.com.
Send us a series of clues, each more cryptic than the last.
That would be amazing. We've had a great time.
Yeah, it's been been a wild ride.
Puppies are barking. Sorry about that.
Sounds like a euphemism for something.
It's a euphemism for actual dogs barking because they're small, so I call them puppies.
The puppies are barking, if you know what I mean. Here on Coronation Street.
Why did you say it in a weird American accent? But then
I was trying for Northern, but I'm really bad at accents.
Oh, that was, yeah. I did not. I thought you were going for Southern American.
Trust me, I am very bad at accents and I know it.
Well, I'm going to try and get you to do one every week now.
Okay. You mean you haven't noticed?
Weirdly, it's escaped me. Anyway, this has been the Mystery Twins Detective Agency, and until next time,
keep watching the skies.
That's not our slogan, but all right.